WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio presents coronavirus special coverage. For WDIY News, this is James Johnson. We are grateful for our next guest's time to update and inform our listeners about the COVID-19 pandemic that has impacted the world, Pennsylvania, and the Lehigh Valley. WDIY is committed to providing accurate, updated information every Lehigh Valley resident needs to make informed decisions. Please welcome Senior Vice President of Medical and Academic Affairs with St. Luke's University Health Network and Chief Emeritus of Infectious Disease Specialists, Dr. Jeffrey Jerry. Doctor, how many COVID-19 tests does St. Luke's University Health Network have ready for incoming potential patients?
Currently, what we're doing is using commercial laboratories, but the good news is that as of next week, we will be able to run these tests in-house on our available platforms that we have at each one of our campuses. If all of our supplies are met, and that includes not only the reagents for the testing, but the supplies to be able to take the appropriate specimen, like the nasal swabs, we will be able to run up to 1,500 tests within a 24-hour period.
What steps are St. Luke's University Health Network taking to prepare for the wave of possible cases in the next 10 days?
We have had a pandemic and epidemic plan that all hospitals should have in place and that we've had in place for many years. This plan is constantly being adjusted for the current threat, which is COVID-19. So what we have been looking at is everything from supplies to ventilators to what we are anticipating would be surge capacity. And we have plans to meet each one of those with the proper response.
How many ventilators does St. Luke's University Health Network have for incoming cases, and how many respirators for healthcare workers are available?
When you're referring to ventilators, we have over 300 ventilators, and that stock is also increasing right now through several different sources. Not everyone needs a ventilator, and for instance, there are certain patients that would be easily accommodated with what we call CPAP, and that would be adequate for people with moderate dysfunction or moderate respiratory distress. Currently, in terms of the proper masking for healthcare workers to use who are coming in contact with COVID patients, we have adequate supplies, and we are looking at ways of extending those supplies, anticipating that there could be a shortage, and there are a number of different avenues that we're taking to meet that.
Doctor, would you please explain the term triage and how St. Luke's University Health Network is screening cases of COVID-19?
What we're telling people to do is if they think they have symptoms, there are a number of different avenues for them to address those. The first thing is to call their primary care doctor, and don't just show up at the door, but to let the physician know that they are coming, and then they can be properly masked and the staff can be protected. If there is a necessity and the doctor will determine that by asking the appropriate questions, that patient may be directed specifically to go to an emergency room if there is an acute illness. We also know that patients can access care through what we call Care Now, which is our urgent care centers, and even through by getting certain directions by calling our hotline or utilizing virtual visits. So there are a number of different platforms for patients to be able to get the care that they need. Questions would be asked in terms of what their risk factors are, what their symptoms are, and they will be given proper advice accordingly.
Is there a higher risk of lung infection for younger residents who may smoke or vape?
The evidence that's coming out of China is very clear that smoking is a risk factor for more severe disease, and that is true irregardless of the age. So we can now utilize that information and say the same would certainly be true for vaping.
Please explain the infection curve, mortality rate, and what modeling of the virus means for Lehigh Valley residents.
So when we talk about infection curve, what you're really talking about are how many cases are you seeing at a given time and then how that is changing over a given period. And what you're looking for over there, you may have heard the term flattening the curve, because if you have large numbers of cases that are coming in all at once, then you have a surge and that can overwhelm your system. So one of the things that we're doing at this point in time is using what we call mitigation techniques. And that's what we are talking about when we encourage social distancing so that patients can do certain things that can certainly lessen the possibility that they're going to have the disease or that they'll all have it at once. That has been effective in other countries. And as you know, it has been started in this area with a number of different issues, such as closing the schools, asking that non-essential businesses be closed, and there are likely to be others. Mortality rate is based on how many people are dying versus how many people actually have the disease. And the initial statistics that came out of China seem to indicate that there could be a mortality of over 3%. However, what one needs to consider is that the only people that were tested were people who were majorly symptomatic. We know that there are many people that are out there who have minimal symptoms that are virtually negligible, and those people weren't being tested. Now that testing is more available, many of these people are being tested, and so that mortality rate has certainly come down. If you want to contrast that to influenza, where there's a mortality rate of 0.1%, I think most experts feel that the current estimate for this disease is about 1%, which is still a lot higher, but that might even come down further as we find out that there are a lot more people who have this, who have minimal symptoms, who have not been tested in the past. There's lots of different modeling, computer data that's coming out. The difficulty is that you have to apply that to your own community, because if you're talking about a community like New York City, specifically New Rochelle, or Seattle, Washington, and certain areas in California, that's a lot different than other areas such as West Virginia or the Lehigh Valley.
And that has everything to do with community spread, I presume.
It has everything to do with community spread and density of population and underlying risk factors.
Are there contingency plans for MASH units, temporary care facilities, and is the National Guard coordinating with St. Luke's University Health Network?
So as part of our surge plan, there has to be considerations for using alternative sites and other facilities, cohorting of patients that have the same disease. And so all of those plans are in effect, and we do have a number of contingency plans to meet what might be an anticipated threat. All of these things are coordinated with governmental agencies, and we do follow the regulations that are stated by the Pennsylvania Department of Health, as well as by the federal government.
Various media outlets are reporting percentages of young people contracting the virus. Is this alarming for young people?
Well, there's a very important point to make over here. What we have been saying, and it's still true, that the people who are most at risk are the people who are elderly and that have underlying diseases that are chronic, such as heart disease, lung disease, kidney disease, diabetes, or other diseases that may compromise their immune system. It has been said in the past that younger people have a milder disease, and that in general is true. What has not been emphasized, though, is they are not exempt from getting this disease, and in fact, in some cases, the disease can be severe in younger people. This is a very important point to keep in mind, because we find that in some cases, people who are young, who are, let's say, under the age of 30, feel that they don't have to take part in any of these social distancing recommendations because they're not going to come down with a major disease. And that's a false premise on at least two different reasons. One is the reason that you point out, that in some cases these people can in fact come down with severe disease, albeit at much less of a rate than those who are older. And the second is because they live with people and come in contact with people who are in a higher risk group, and that is older people and people who have compromised immune systems, they have the capacity then to spread that disease to those folks who might have a much more severe case. So the bottom line and the important lesson to be learned over here is that the recommendations apply to everyone. One of the things that I think is most important over here is to keep informed, and to keep informed by reputable sources. And I can give people a number of different ways of doing that. Our own health network, the St. Luke's Health Network, has a hotline where you can ask individual questions. You can go onto our website, and there is all kinds of information that's there that apply to specific situations. And there's also ways that you can ask directly by the Internet. In addition to that, there are governmental agencies that also have websites, and that includes Pennsylvania Department of Health and the Center for Disease Control, or CDC.gov. One of the things that I want to point out is the reason why we feel this is so important is because valid information helps keep people informed and keeps the alarm level from getting out of hand. And so I think an informed public is a public that's much better off and able to deal with the situation at hand.
Well, Dr. Jeffrey Jerry, we thank you for making time to update our listeners in the Lehigh Valley and are grateful for all you are doing. For WDIY News, this is James Johnson.